Lecture 4, Transcendence.
We return to great masters, Liszt, his life and music. This is Lecture 4, entitled simply, Transcendence. Sometime in late September of 1839, Franz Liszt, a few days shy of his 28th birthday, received news that would change his life. Back in Bonn, Germany, the Beethoven Memorial Committee announced that an international effort to raise money for a monument to Beethoven had failed, and failed miserably. Oh, in France, the effort had managed to raise the less than princely sum of 424 francs, 90 centimes. Well, Liszt was livid, furious over what he considered the grossest possible insult to his greatest musical hero. He wrote to Berlioz, and I quote, "Such a cheapskate almsgiving, got together by sending round the hat, must not be permitted towards building our Beethoven monument," unquote. Liszt, who was living in Italy at the time, wrote the committee in Bonn and offered to deliver whatever money was still needed to complete the project, asking only that he might be permitted to name the sculptor for the monument. The committee back in Bonn, oh, clearly incompetent, was only too happy to hand the project over to someone else and gladly acquiesced to Liszt's conditions regarding the sculptor. Now, my friends, this was the trigger. This was the catalyst Liszt had been waiting for. The only way he could raise that kind of money, oh, we're talking roughly 20,000 francs, give or take, was to go on the road and perform. Marie, of course, screamed and yelled and forbade Franz to even think about leaving again. But his mind was made up. Liszt biographer Peter Raab was right on the mark when he wrote that, quote, "In her doubtless strong love for him, Marie had never considered that so magical a genius as the young Liszt belonged to the whole world, not just to her," unquote. The break with Marie was not yet permanent. That event was still 4 years in the future. Certainly from Liszt's point of view, the psychological break had begun. For Liszt, it was time to shed his domestic skin and get his career as a performer back on track. And just because he'd been hanging out in Switzerland and Italy with Marie Dajou, let us not for a minute think that Liszt had been idle over the last couple of years. Oh, despite the distractions, his nomadic moving about, the births of the children, Marie's mood swings, despite the distractions, Liszt had been incredibly productive. He'd been practicing and had attained a level of technique and poetry at the piano that was soon to take the European world completely by storm. And he had been composing. By his own estimate, he had written 400 to 500 pages of piano music. In 1838, he had completed the first versions of 3 seminally important sets of piano pieces, the 6 grand etudes after Paganini, the transcendental etudes, and most of the Italian volume of Years of Pilgrimage. The music. We begin our examination of Liszt's so-called transcendental music with the 6 grand etudes after Paganini. Now, 5 of these studies are transcriptions from Paganini's 24 caprices for unaccompanied violin. And one of them, La Campanella, is a set of variations on that same Italian folk song that Paganini had used in the 3rd movement of his B minor violin concerto and that Liszt subsequently set in his Grande Bravura fantasy on La Clochette back in 1832. Yes, this can be confusing. Before we start listening, a couple of quick words about the various versions of the same piece we are faced with when it comes to Liszt's piano music. For example, he first published the 6 grand etudes after Paganini first published them in 1840. 11 years later, in 1851, he revised them and had the revised version published as well. For Liszt, these works were a musical diary, a diary in which he reveals to himself and his public his constantly evolving view of piano technique. Now, look, I don't know about you, but I think it would have been fantastic and fascinating if Beethoven, for example, had rewritten the same set of piano pieces two or three times over the span of his career. Such an explicit example of his compositional evolution and evolving use of the piano would, I think, have been nothing short of revelatory.